Welcome to Family Matters. I'm Tracy Sarabin, and this show is for expectant and new parents. It's all about the changes, challenges, and choices that couples go through once they decide to bring babies into their lives. Well, this show is one, I should say the topic of the show is one that is very near and dear to my heart because it's everything surrounding infertility. When I was, I think it was 37 years old, my husband and I had been kind of trying to get pregnant, but we really started seriously saying, okay, let's go and try to get pregnant. But of course, you've got busy lives, you know, and it's like you meet for your little sexual encounter. Is it the right time of the month? Is it not the right time of the month? And then we were trying to buy a house, so we were busy with that, and I was busy with my business. But once we moved into our house, I remember sitting out on the patio with my husband and I'm saying, you know, it's been like almost 2 years since we've been trying to get pregnant and nothing's happened. You know, should we really go and talk to somebody? And at this point, I didn't know anybody that was going through or had gone through infertility treatments. So I had no idea what the scenario was. And it was only when my husband had said, oh, well, do you remember so-and-so that just had a baby? Well, they had gone through infertility treatments. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. And when I spoke to them, she said, oh, you know, there's a seminar coming up at this clinic that we had gone to. It talks about, you know, you've been trying to get pregnant and why you may not have gotten pregnant. She goes, why don't you go? So I said, you know what? I think I'm going to go just to find out what I don't know. Well, the scary thing was I left that, my husband had been working that night. I left that seminar and I was scared to death that my biological clock was almost done. And here I was, 38 years old, getting to be almost 39. So in this show, I want to talk about options for continuing your family, whether you've gone through infertility treatments to have your current baby, whether you've gone through infertility treatments before, or even if you've had your baby and you're thinking, you know, what do we do next? Do we want baby number two? Do we want baby number three? How old am I? And can we have those babies? Because what you're going to find out with my guests is that there is a huge number of percentage of couples that have secondary infertility. So joining me later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Dr. Daniel Shapiro, MD, who's a board certified in both obstetrics and gynecology and reproductive endocrinology with infertility. He's a member of the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and the Society of Reproductive Endocrinologists. He currently works with Reproductive Biology Associates in Georgia, and I am going to talk to him about the newest cutting-edge technology, which is egg freezing. And joining me now is Mindy Berkson, founder of Lotus Blossom Consulting, one of the first infertility consultancies in the United States. She started it in 2005 after her own battle with secondary infertility to assist individuals to achieve their family building goals. So Mindy, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Tracy.
Now, let's first start talking about why you created Lotus Blossom, because I have to say that I had read an article about you this summer, and you were called the Stork Whisperer, which I happened to love, and finding out that you are kind of a one-stop resource facility for everybody going through infertility, I think that's fabulous.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, obviously, my company was born out of the need that I saw from my past experience having gone through infertility. When I did go through infertility, it was 14, 15 years ago, so the technology and the process was very different than it is today. But the premise that there was no advocate to help me through the process and to understand how my insurance benefits apply, how I'm going to afford to pay for treatment, and what are the options available to me to explore to expand my family. And I felt very alone, very unwilling to share with other people because I was ashamed that I couldn't get pregnant.
Well, and that's what I was feeling too. You know, I walked into the fertility clinic, you know, sat down in my chair, grabbed my magazine, put it in front of my face, and just kind of looked around over, peeked over the magazine and saw all these women that were my age and nobody was talking.
Right. Right.
You know, because you're feeling like, hey, you know, this is supposed to be the most natural thing in your life is having a baby, and you can't even do that. Which is not the way we should feel, but unfortunately, that's the way kind of, I don't know whether society has put that on us or whether it's just been one of those things that gets passed down to our generation.
Well, I think it does get passed down to our generations. Our mothers never had problems getting pregnant. Our grandmothers never had problems. But let's face it, they were all done with their pregnancies by the time they were 27.
Yes,
and
yes.
And today, fertility decreases at 27, and we're not even married at 27.
Well, and that's the whole thing. I mean, I was sitting there looking at all these women my age who looked like me in a different body. You know, it was
right.
Like, okay, I was concentrating my career all during my 20s and into my 30s. I shifted my career and moved up north. I didn't meet my husband and get married right away. And, you know, and then we got married and hey, boom, I'm in my mid 30s already. So it's like, okay, all the fertility years were just gone.
Exactly. Exactly. Yet here you are at a point in your life where you're really ready to have a family financially, physically, emotionally. And you're being told that your body doesn't function anymore.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I want to try to share with not only this show, but try to be, you know, be part of the movement of more awareness out there. And there is more awareness now, even today, than there was a couple years ago when I went through infertility treatments. But it seemed like there was this whole subculture of women. I mean, millions of women going through infertility that I had no clue about.
Right.
And the media was telling you, oh, look at this celebrity. She's in her 40s and she just had twins, or she's, you know, 43 and she just had her baby. And so I kept thinking, wow, I've got all this time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm healthy. My body is in good shape. I should be able to go into my 40s with no problem having a baby, right?
Right.
But it's not true.
It doesn't work that way, unfortunately. Fertility is definitely a function of age, and it does start to decline at 27, with a significant decline once a woman reaches 40.
So I know that what your practice is really, obviously it's about providing information, like you said, insurance information, and we're going to go through all kinds of options for continuing your family and things that you kind of talk to couples about. But I think one of the things that I thought was most important about what you and I had discussed early on when we were talking about your practice is that your goal is to sit down with a couple and say, okay, what's your end goal for your family? Not, okay, I want to have a baby today, but do you want to have two babies? Do you want to have three babies? What do you want to do?
Right. And how do we effectively plan to maximize your chances of success for the end family building goal while simultaneously trying to minimize the financial expenditures to get there?
Yeah.
And I think the best way to achieve that, and I do this with my clients, is to address the end family building goal first, to have a firm grasp of what are our insurance benefits and what will they cover, what will they not cover, so we're prepared for out-of-pocket expenses, and we use all of these in the decision-making process to determine what is the best path for me to explore this end family building goal.
Yeah. Yeah, and how can you achieve it?
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, it's all about insurance, it's all about finances, it's all about, you know, having that whole family that you dream mm-hmm. about and not just saying, okay, we're going to have one, and then you're so excited that you had the one, and then it's like, okay, 2 years down the road, well, now should we think about number two, and what happens if we can't get pregnant now?
Exactly. And so how do we build the most options in at the very beginning so you have choices to explore later on?
Yeah. And I know for me, I didn't get any of that discussion. I mean, my whole discussion was coming back from that seminar, talking to my husband, saying, okay, I'm setting an appointment tomorrow. We're going to go talk to an infertility clinic, you know, and my doctor, my OBGYN, had actually given me some names, probably a list of five names 6 months to a year ago that I had, you know, put on my cork board and never looked at again. And, you know, and then started calling some people and checking out their information on their websites, and then went in and had a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't talk about any of that. We just talked about, okay, well, you know, let's try to get you pregnant.
Well, and you know, Tracy, that's a bit of a problem too, because I feel that the answers you get are only as good as the questions you ask.
And you don't know what the questions are.
You never know what questions to ask.
Yeah.
So this is a very important element of my consults, too, is here's a list of talking points that you really need to address with your physician.
Okay.
And I think that's an excellent starting point at the very beginning of the medical consult.
Yeah.
And if you're not happy with those answers, then you need to take those questions and get a second opinion.
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, what's unfortunate is we're now finding out, and hopefully we don't have this across the board, but the whole octuplets situation that's happened, you know, here's a fertility doctor that I'm sorry, but he should not have been continually having this woman have these fertility treatments, and I don't know how she could afford it, because believe me, I went through it. And, you know, how, first of all, I don't know how she could afford it, because I know that, I know how much it costs, and it's expensive. And that's why I think your consultancy is so important, too, because luckily, my husband had a great insurance, and I was able to call again, but I know no answer, I have no none of the right questions, I should say, about asking my insurance company. It's just, I'm looking to go into the fertility clinic. You know, what do you cover? Well, she started rattling off stuff that I have no idea what that means.
Right.
But I did know that she covered three IVF treatments. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay. Now, in my mind, three didn't sound very many. But then I was finding out that some insurance companies don't cover any. So I guess three was a lot. But again, you don't know.
You don't know, and it's so individualized because every company, every policy, every individual has different coverage.
Yes.
And what you need to know from the very beginning is how to maximize that coverage. Because at best, across the country, insurance benefits for infertility are limited.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about multiple cycles.
Well, I'm sorry, just for 1 second, too. When I had gone through that seminar, and I wanted to make sure that this is right as well, I was told by this person that your insurance company may cover the whole workup to see whether you have an infertility problem, but they may not even cover the treatments.
Right, so it's just the diagnostic coverage.
Yeah, which I'm like, well, what good is that?
That's a drop in the bucket, price-wise.
Yeah, exactly. And then it doesn't help you. Okay, so now I have an infertility issue, and you're not going to help me work it out?
Correct.
You know, so that's really challenging.
Mm-hmm. So you really have to plan your course of treatment very carefully. And you have to decide, how many times am I going to go through a particular treatment cycle with a given chance of success before I turn to the next option,
yeah,
which may yield a higher chance of success and cost more money, but how many dollars am I going to put at each attempt?
Well,
and physically, what am I going to endure?
Yes, yes.
And emotionally, what can I handle? And so there's a lot of things that play into the decision-making process when you're planning your treatment.
Well, and I think that's so important, too, because I can remember that, you know, here I was told, okay, I've got three IVF treatments. So I go to this, my husband and I go to the meeting again with my fertility doctor after he's done my workup and whatever. And yes, okay, I could have some old eggs, which, you know, you listen to that and you go, oh my God, how is that possible? You know, so I have old eggs, possibly. They don't know for sure. But okay, so my insurance company would prefer that I go through three sets of artificial insemination before the IVF, because they're hoping I get pregnant that way and it's cheaper than going IVF. And so I'm sitting there going, oh, well, in my mind, okay, I have more chances of getting pregnant. And my husband's saying, well, I want to just go straight for IVF because I want us to get pregnant quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, we're not having a chance to even discuss these before we go to this meeting with the doctor. You know, and mm-hmm. now we're having to make a decision, okay, is this what we want to do? I mean, obviously, it was what we had to do, because that's what our insurance was telling us. But as we went through the three artificial inseminations, and they didn't work, and went, get ready to go IVF, I'm thinking in my mind, okay, what's my backup plan?
Well, that, and also, you're on these three medication cycles for these inseminations, and your chances of success are so slim, why are you on these medications?
Yes.
And who's an insurance company to say you should go this route? It's the physician who says if your chances of success are this slim, here's what I recommend, and it's IVF.
Yeah. Well, in this case, he had said that going through the artificial inseminations may actually help in getting us ready for IVF because he could tell how my body would react to the medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, because I don't take any medicine really at all, my ovaries got overstimulated after the first cycle because of all the medication. You know, so you don't know. So let's just take a break here for a second. This is Tracy Sarabin with Family Matters, and I'm having a wonderful conversation with Mindy Berkson, who's founder of Lotus Blossom Consulting, which is one of the first infertility consultancies in the United States. She started in 2005 after her own battle with secondary infertility. And we're talking all about options for continuing your family and thinking ahead and how to maximize your coverage, how to put together talking points needed to address with your physician, and really kind of giving you a heads up on what if, you know, you have your child now, but could you have secondary infertility kick in after you're ready for that second baby, and what are your options? Later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Dr. Daniel Shapiro, MD, who currently works with the Reproductive Biology Associates in Georgia. He's a board certified in both obstetrics and gynecology and reproductive endocrinology, and he's going to be talking to us about the newest cutting-edge technology in egg freezing. So now our weekly feature, Couples First, Parents Second. When was the last time you cuddled up with your partner on the couch or held hands out in public? It is the little touches, the loving gestures, and the displays of affection that keep your relationship strong. Don't forget how important that is for you and your partner as you have your children come into your lives. Also, this show is based on my book, 101 Questions for Expectant Parents. It's all about preserving your relationship through the transition. And I created it as a talking tool because being a communication expert in family issues, I thought my husband and I had talked about everything before our baby arrived and realized when we got home from the hospital that we hadn't talked about anything. And we were having all these conflicts and misunderstandings at a time when we were sleep deprived and juggling our new roles. And both of us had said, gosh, I wish we would have talked about some of these things before the baby arrived, which is why I wrote this book. So you can get it on Amazon.com or on my website, TracySarabin.com. And you can also check out my blog, Motherhood 24/7. So Mindy, let's talk about the whole idea of the treatments and the options for continuing your family. So in my case, I went through 3 artificial inseminations and went through 1 IVF treatment. But no one's sitting there saying, okay, well, what happens when you're done with that first one and you want to go for a second one? And now, hello, you're at the end of what your insurance company is going to cover for you. Are you, like you said, are you maximizing your coverage? No one talked to me about that. You know, so I mean, hey, what would have happened? Luckily, I did get pregnant and have my son. But what would have happened if I, being the desperate person that I was trying to have a baby, maxed out all my 3 choices and then I have no baby?
And then you're stuck with huge out-of-pocket expenses to go through an IVF cycle or an IVF cycle with an egg donor.
Yes, which is what I want to talk about because I know that you and I talked about egg donor, egg banking, sperm bank, but, and I want to cover some of that before we finish here today. But in my mind, I'm a person who thinks up a backup plan. And again, this is without talking to an expert. And I'm thinking, okay, my God, what if I go through one and it doesn't work? Should I get an egg donor? And what will my insurance cover? And what about my sister? She's pretty young. Maybe she could do it with me. Mm-hmm. And you start thinking about all these things. But then again, I don't even know what the right questions are to ask.
Right. Well, I think that I always recommend to my clients, if you have any intention of ever using an egg donor or you need to consider that possibility, always save at least 1 cycle of your insurance if it's available to cover egg donation.
Okay.
So that's one way to maximize the benefits because obviously to go through a cycle with an egg donor is more expensive than going through an IVF cycle of your own.
Well, yeah, because you're also having to go through an IVF cycle of your own with that egg donor person because you have to get your body ready for that.
Right.
And you have to pay for their workup and their eggs.
And their medications.
And their medications, yeah.
So it could be a very expensive cycle. Now, the advantages of using an egg donor are that because egg donors are about 21 to 32 years old,
mm-hmm.
their chances of success or their chances of yielding more eggs and better quality eggs are much higher than a woman who is 37 plus years old.
Yeah.
So the chances of yielding numerous embryos that we can put in cryopreservation, is the backup plan for future genetic siblings.
Which is great. And to put a little simplest terms on that, when I had gone and had my eggs taken out, I think I had like 12 eggs. And so I'm thinking, oh, 12, I only need one. Hey, how fabulous is that? Okay. But then I hear the woman next to me talking to her husband, and he said, oh, yeah, they pulled out 25. And I'm thinking, 25? So I have like my 12 eggs, and the little eggs go out there, and you know, you mix up the sperm and whatever, and you come back and you think, okay, I'm going to have 12 embryos. No, we only had 5. And of those 5 embryos, one was really good, 2 were okay, and 2 were mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while we're talking about that octuplet woman, you know, he put in 6, and in her, because she's young, put 6 solid embryos in there, which is absolutely ridiculous. My doctor recommended putting my five in there because I really only had one good one.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you know, one good one could get you a baby, but I've seen, you know, not so great ones have a baby too. So if I had 5 really good embryos, I would have only put in 1 or 2. And like you said, saved the other ones for another treatment to see whether it would have worked or not.
Right.
So, yeah. So egg donation. And that's really where a lot of these celebrities are getting pregnant, because they have donor eggs, the ones that are in their 40s and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If they're willing to admit that.
Well, they're probably not. Because no one wants to admit, again, it goes back to this subculture, no one wants to admit that you couldn't do it on your own.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the sperm bank and egg banking.
Okay. Well, can we start with egg banking?
Mm-hmm.
Egg banking is, I think, a wonderful option for women who are exploring their careers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they haven't met Prince Charming yet.
Yes.
And they're just not ready to make a commitment and settle down. And they know someday they want to have their own biological child, but just are not ready to do that. And egg banking is a wonderful opportunity for women up to the age of 38.
Okay.
Who can go through the IVF process to retrieve their eggs, freeze them, and when they're ready in the future, maybe after they've married or, you know, just ready to have a child, they can take those eggs out of the freezer, fertilize them with partner or donor sperm, and they, once they become embryos, they have the option then to refreeze these embryos. So there's still great possibility to have future genetic siblings, even if you do egg banking.
Which, to me, is fabulous, because and that's why I'm so excited to talk to Dr. Shapiro next, because this was not even around 2 years ago, when I was first starting to talk about the whole IVF treatment. So this is really cutting edge.
It's really cutting edge. It's definitely new technology, but even though it's considered experimental technology, the data has really justified that women can expect age-related outcomes from the fertility preservation. So, for example, if a 35-year-old woman freezes her eggs, she can expect a pregnancy rate of a 35-year-old when she's maybe 42 exploring to use these eggs.
Which is great.
It's fabulous. And it's an insurance policy, it's an opportunity, and it's also an opportunity for women who may have been diagnosed with cancer.
Yes.
At an early age, and before they explore any sort of chemo treatments or oncology treatments, this is an opportunity for them to preserve their fertility for later on. And I think that's a wonderful option that has never been available before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think, Mindy, I think what's really important for the listeners of this show, too, is if you've had your first child and you're sitting there and you're looking at your late 30s, you really need to consider, do you want a second child? And what happens if you run into secondary infertility? Because what they're saying right now is if you're in your late 30s, if you don't have a baby within 6 months, you really should start checking out other options.
Right.
So that's really important for continuing your family.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we could talk again about surrogacy and I know we talked about several things. And maybe what we do is I have you back on the show to talk about some other stuff, because I think that this is a really important topic for families, for moms, for women who are trying to continue their family or, you know, having their career and haven't found, like you said, Mr. Prince Charming. So what is your website that people can check out and learn more about what you're doing, and they can call you if they have further questions?
My website is www.lotusblossomconsulting.com.
Great.
And all my contact information is on that website. Please feel free to call me toll-free at 877-881-2685, or you could always email me at mindy@lotusblossomconsulting.com.
Mindy, thank you so much for being on the show. I love talking with you, and I think, like I said, we got to get you back on the show maybe in a couple months, and we'll start talking about some other stuff, because all of this information is really, really important.
Tracy, I appreciate it so much and would love to be a guest of yours again.
Thanks, Mindy.
Okay.
And for this week, special moments, when the world is crazy and hectic, I love just focusing in on my son. 2 years old. He is wonderful. He has this loving spirit and he is hilarious. I mean, he's just so funny, the things that he does and things that he says. And he is the one who keeps me grounded. And the endearing statements that come from his mouth and his little body just melt my heart. It was just yesterday I was driving him over to the sitter and he's in his little seat in the back seat and he says, "Mommy, you're my hero." And I was like, "Oh, honey, thank you so much. I love you." And it was the first time he said back to me, "I love you too, Mommy." So tap into your children for joy and happiness, because they are what makes this crazy world all worthwhile. Coming up next is Dr. Daniel Shapiro, MD, with Reproductive Biology Associates in Georgia. He's a reproductive endocrinologist, and he will be sharing cutting-edge information about egg freezing. So stay tuned.
This is Family Matters with Tracy Sarabin on WebTalkRadio.net.
Welcome back to Family Matters. I'm Tracy Sarabin, and this show is all about options for continuing your family. While we were talking to Mindy Berkson with Lotus Blossom Consulting all about what the end game is and kind of keeping in your mind that secondary infertility is a reality, especially once you start getting older in age and you want to have a second baby. This section of the show, I really wanted to touch on an important cutting-edge technology that I think is really, really valuable for women who are especially career-oriented, maybe not finding, like Mindy said, Prince Charming until later on in their lives, but they really want a family. How can they start planning ahead? So joining me is Dr. Daniel Shapiro, MD, board-certified in both obstetrics and gynecology, as well as reproductive endocrinology with infertility. He's a member of the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and the Society of Reproductive Endocrinologists. And he has his practice in Atlanta, Georgia. So, Dr. Daniel Shapiro, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. And my apologies in advance for sounding like I'm talking underwater. I'm just getting over a cold myself.
Well, I think there's a lot of colds and viruses just floating around anyway. So I think I had a little something in my throat, too.
Well, we can hawk and cough the whole way through the interview. It'll be fine with me.
That sounds good. What I want to talk to you about is this cutting-edge work you're doing at Reproductive Biology Associates in regards to egg freezing, because I think that it is so cutting-edge that 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago when I was at my infertility clinic talking about, you know, what my options were, and he said, you know, at 38, getting ready to turn 39, that I had old eggs, my first statement to him is, well, I should have freezed them back in my 30s. And he said, well, it isn't a viable option right then, but it is today.
It certainly is.
Great. So let's talk about that.
Well, egg freezing, actually, it's been around for quite a while. The first successful frozen egg babies were born in the 90s.
Okay.
And actually, our practice had the first frozen egg babies delivered in 1997
okay.
by a technique called slow freeze,
all right.
which is automated. The trick to slow freezing is to get the concentrations of the salt solutions that the embryo or the egg lives in, as well as the concentrations of the antifreeze exactly right. And it took a long time to work that out.
Okay.
Slow freeze has come a long way, and in the last 10 to 12 years, more tweaking of the salt solutions and the antifreeze solutions have resulted in acceptably good thaw survival rates and subsequent pregnancy rates.
Now,
but slow freeze is not the way to go.
Okay. So what is the way to go?
The way to go is a process called vitrification. And okay. if you break that word down to, I think it's Latin, vitra means glass. And to vitrify something is to make it into glass, basically.
Okay, okay.
And vitrification differs from slow freeze in a couple of very important physical ways. Slow freeze is true freezing, where there's a what's called a phase shift from the liquid phase to the solid phase.
Mm-hmm.
Vitrification, there is no phase shift. The embryo technically remains in liquid, but the liquid is at such incredibly low temperature, super cooled, that it's as thick and as solid as glass.
So I know when, I think it was 3 years ago that I was sitting at my doctor's office, he said the reason that the egg freezing wasn't as viable is because you couldn't be sure of the qualities once they thawed them out.
That's correct. When you do slow freeze, if you have not completely dehydrated the egg, ice crystals form inside the egg and act like little knives that stab the egg from the inside out.
Oh, nice.
And destroy it. Well, that's exactly
yeah.
what happens.
Yeah, so it's destroying
With vitrification, that technically can happen if you don't adequately dehydrate the egg. But the salt solutions for vitrification are so incredibly high, a high concentration, that they do completely dehydrate the egg. And the antifreeze concentrations are different as well. And the end result is the physical properties of the egg are not affected by the supercooling.
So
it's just put into suspended animation.
So I know that we were talking about the fact that going through this vitrification,
mm-hmm.
you've done 25 cycles that have been successful.
Oh, way more than that now.
Well, 25 cycles last year, but this year you have done a whole bunch more and plan to do like 45 to 50 by the end of the year, right?
Well, we're way ahead of that.
Okay.
In our egg donor program, we're about to do our 100th embryo transfer with frozen eggs.
Oh, great.
And the delivered and ongoing pregnancy rate right now is about 72%.
Okay.
Which means that of the 100 women or so who've had transfers, about 71 or 2 have either already delivered or have a pregnancy test that is going normally. They've shown signs of viability, and the pregnancy is progressing.
Which is wonderful.
It's fantastic. We're delighted.
So this is really, I think you had mentioned to me, success is about the same as a fresh cycle of eggs.
Yes, in egg donation, that's true.
Okay.
When a woman is freezing her own eggs, we have a smaller data set. It's also a good size, but not as big as the egg donor set.
Okay.
In women using their own eggs, it's about 20 to 25 patients.
Okay.
And the pregnancy rate for the whole of the data set is between 55 and 60%.
Okay.
Which is the same as the fresh rate for those patients.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference. And the difference is that because some of the women who are freezing eggs for themselves in our study were doing it up to age 38 and a half.
Okay.
At individual ages, the pregnancy rate expectation from egg freezing is the same as whatever their normal IVF pregnancy rate would be.
Okay.
So
okay.
if you're 30 and you're doing IVF, then the quality programs, you get about a 50% chance of pregnancy. If you vitrify eggs at age 30, whatever age you are when you come to thaw them out, your pregnancy rate will be 50%.
Based on age of 30, even though you may be going for an IVF at 38?
Correct.
Okay,
but
great.
If you're 38 when you freeze your eggs, the IVF pregnancy rate's 25 to 30%.
Yes, because you're older already.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So if you freeze your eggs at 38, when you come back to thaw them out, the pregnancy rate will be 25 to 30%.
So the point that we're trying to make in all of this is if you're in your 20s, let's say, and you are really busy with your career and you want to have a family, but you don't see it until sometime in your 30s, if you're interested and want a backup plan, which is what I consider, go through freezing your eggs so that when you do find that Mr. Right and you do want to put your career on hold, you may be 36, 37 years old, and you've got your eggs when you were 27.
Correct. So plenty of 36, 37, 38-year-olds can get pregnant on their own.
Yes.
So what you're basically doing is you're buying insurance.
Yes.
It's insurance against having poor egg quality when you start a family in the late 30s.
And also, if you are freezing your eggs when you're in your late 20s, let's say, for example, and you start your family at 35, 36, if you want more than one child, you may definitely run into fertility problems when that second one is about ready to say, okay, now we want to start baby number two.
Correct. In fact, that's the link to secondary infertility, because there are lots of people who have their first child at 34, 35, and they do it easily.
Yes.
And then they decide to have baby number two at 38 or 39, and it's not going so well.
So here's another option with that then. Maybe you have your baby regularly with your partner or whatever at 34, 35, but you've mm-hmm. still got that insurance plan of those eggs that are frozen back in your 20s. And now if you do run into the problem where you may have secondary infertility because you're trying with baby number two or baby number three
mm-hmm.
later in your 30s, now you've got your frozen eggs that you could just pop right in.
That is certainly one application of the technology. What's happening, though, with egg freezing for women who want to do it themselves with their own eggs
yeah.
is that there aren't a lot of 20-year-olds who are considering this.
No,
20-something.
No.
So the right time for women to be thinking about this is if they're 31, 32, 33, 34, and not yet married or planning a family on their own, and they know that they're going to want to look at having a family in a few years, but they're not ready at that point. It's still a very viable and valuable technology for women up to age 35, and actually several of our pregnancies have occurred in women up to age 38.
Okay.
Freezing eggs. In fact, the oldest patient to freeze eggs and initiate pregnancy here is 39.
Great.
Yeah, but let's look at who those women are. These are women who have perfectly normal ovarian function
mm-hmm.
and who make an awful lot of eggs when they take the fertility drug.
So
yes. Somebody at 38 who is single and comes in and we find out that they're not going to make a lot of eggs
yeah.
is probably not going to benefit from egg freezing.
Okay.
And it may already be too late for them.
Yeah.
Well, I
know that when I was talking to Mindy in the last segment, you know, I went in at 39 and had my eggs taken out for the IVF treatment and only had 12.
That's still a lot for 39.
Oh, well, that was good. But they weren't all great.
Which is typical.
Which was the problem, yes. They weren't great. So let's talk about the four examples of why people are now freezing eggs. We've talked about the one example, which is the insurance policy.
Right.
And I think you had mentioned to me that now, since the egg freezing has become so viable, you're having almost like 5,000 women per year using the service.
Well, not in our practice, but
no,
nationwide.
Not in your practice. Yeah, nationwide.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, though everybody else except us is doing fertility preservation with slow freeze.
Okay.
And it's not nearly as efficient.
Okay.
But there's a company that markets a kit called Extend Fertility, and they're wonderful people, and they've got a great product, and they can offer this service, but they're using a slow freeze technique.
Okay.
And I think the end result is that it's more expensive, too, though I don't know that for a fact.
Okay.
But the key problem with slow freeze is that it takes 12 to maybe 14 eggs to be sure you're going to get a quality embryo.
Okay. That's where a lot.
It's a lot. Where with vitrification, it's more like 4, 5, or 6.
Okay.
So when you're talking about those kinds of degrees of efficiency, people who are egg freezing and they get, say, 12 or 14 eggs to freeze, if they did it by slow freeze, they may only get one shot at a thaw and an embryo transfer.
Wow.
Where if they've taken those same eggs and vitrified them, they might be able to get 2 or in some cases even 3 transfers out of that.
Which, again, like you said before, gets even more difficult as you get older in age because you're not producing as many eggs.
Correct.
Or and as many quality eggs.
That is correct. So not only do you want to be able to get plenty of eggs when you make a choice to do this, but you want the technique that you freeze your eggs by to be efficient enough to give you more than one chance at the baby when you come back to thaw your eggs out.
Well, especially if you did it when you were a few years ago, because now you don't have that same shot anymore.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, so example number one is fertility preservation. That's what everybody calls it. That's
okay.
The first application of egg freezing. But interestingly, this is probably going to be one of the smaller applications, even though this is the one that gets all the press.
Well, it's the one because it's hot and new, and it's another
right.
option for planning your life out.
Right, and because Martha Stewart's daughter talked about it on Oprah.
Oh.
Well, that is why.
Okay, okay.
But this is, you know, you consider all the people doing reproductive technology in the U.S., you know, 100 to 150,000 treatment cycles a year of some kind of fertility-related procedure, and if only 5,000 of them are for egg freezing, that's not a big number.
No.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But now let's go to application number 2. This is for egg banking.
Okay.
For egg donation. A lot of women get to be 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, and it's not happening, but they're married and they want children, and their own eggs can't do it. So they need an egg donor. Traditional egg donation has been around since 1984, and it involves giving fertility drugs to the donor, recovering her eggs, inseminating all of her eggs with her husband, with the recipient's husband's sperm,
okay,
incubating the embryos for a couple of days, 3 to 5 days, and then putting them into the recipient.
Yes.
And this can be done either as an open donation or it can be done anonymously.
Mm-hmm.
But the key thing there is that you have to coordinate the treatment cycles of both
two women at the same time, which can be very difficult.
It can be difficult, though. I mean, those of us who do this for a living, I mean, we do this like buttering our bread. But
yeah.
But still, you've got to get two schedules in sync,
mm-hmm.
and you have to make sure everybody's on the same page. And, you know, the recipient may not be ready when the donor is, and the donor may not be ready when the recipient is.
Well, and this is an example. I was talking to Mindy about the fact that when I was going through my fertility treatments, my insurance company was only covering 3 IVFs.
Right.
So I was getting ready to do the first one, and I'm thinking, okay, what's going to be my backup plan? I don't want to go through all 3, and then I'm still not pregnant, you know, if I'm still having a problem. So I started thinking about egg donation and started looking at my sister, because
mm-hmm.
she's 14 years younger than me.
Perfect.
But I'm thinking, okay, does she need to come up from Florida and be on the same cycle as me and be
yes.
going through all of this stuff? Where you're talking about now, she could do it in Florida, let's say, and freeze them and get them sent up so that I can work with it on my cycle.
Well, no, that's one way to do it, yeah.
Okay.
Or she could come to Chicago and she could have them frozen in Chicago so they don't have to be shipped, and there are a couple of different ways to do it. But
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But the key point there is that you have to coordinate cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, you really don't know what the eggs are like till you get them out, and we have some donors who are duds. You
okay.
know, dud donors, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Where your first time donor coming through, you really don't know what her egg quality is going to be like and what kind of embryos she's going to generate
okay.
until you actually do the procedure. So that's problem number two. Problem number three is the cost. When you sit down and you look at what banks, or not banks, but clinics, typically charge for egg donation procedures, it varies by region of the country.
Okay.
But about the least expensive egg donations in the U.S. right now are between $19,000 and $21,000 per attempt. And more typically, it's like $25,000 to $28,000. And in states that use donor agencies very heavily,
mm-hmm.
it's even more expensive because you have to pay the agent.
Yeah.
And so you wind up spending maybe $30,000 to $35,000 to complete an egg donation cycle.
Which is really expensive.
It's very expensive, and there's no guarantee of success.
Okay.
And the kind of the baseline rate that, that most good clinics quote is between 50 and 60%, but that still means that about half the people it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So let's look at egg banking then. So if you can freeze eggs and parse them out in groups of, say, 5, 6, or 7,
mm-hmm.
then you can reduce the cost of egg donation. And the good news here is you can do it without compromising the success rate.
Great.
And that's what's happened here. That's what our 100 cycles are about.
Okay.
Those are in egg donors who are between the ages of 21 and 30. They donate their eggs, and we freeze them.
Okay.
And then our recipients, instead of being matched by our team, can go online after they've completed a workup with us and select their donor. They can look at a baby picture or a juvenile picture, but we have an anonymity policy.
Yep.
And so they can't see an adult picture. We attract extremely high-quality donors, and one of the ways in which we're able to do that is to guarantee their anonymity.
Hold on one second with that, Doctor.
Sure.
I want to take a break here. This is Tracy Sarabin with Family Matters, and we're talking to Dr. Shapiro about egg freezing and the four examples of why to freeze eggs, all about options for continuing your family and family planning. So we were talking about the fact that you can freeze your eggs up to age 38 and then thaw them out and get ready to have your family when you're ready to do that. And preferably, he's saying that most people who do it are at age 31 or 32, so that in case they do run into not being able to start that family until later on or running into secondary infertility. And we're also talking about egg donation and egg banking with that. So we're going to be following up with that more. When you get a chance, check out my blog, Motherhood 24/7, on my website, which is TracySarabin.com. I have my Tracy's Tips for Being a Balanced Mom on there, as well as more information about my radio guests and the topics that we're talking about. And also, if you're feeling overwhelmed with being a new parent, if you're having communication breakdowns with your spouse, you're looking for some insight, please give me a call. My practice is all about strengthening the family. You can call me at 1-888-261-7177. So, Doctor, you're talking about the egg donation, cutting costs by half the price, and then also being able to do it on your own cycle.
That's correct. So the way it works now, the donors, we already know the eggs are good quality because mm-hmm. we wouldn't have frozen them if they weren't.
Okay.
So the eggs are already in the bank. The recipient goes online. She selects her donor, and on our website, which is myeggbank.com,
okay.
the recipient can look at the entire profile of that donor. The only thing she cannot see is the name or an adult face.
Okay.
But she can see a baby picture.
Great.
The psych profiles are not posted because there's too much identifying information, but we only include donors in the website and the database who have already passed their psychological screening.
Okay.
But they can see the genetics report, the intake consult, the lab work, everything related to that donor. Then what they do is they make a selection, they email our staff, and Melinda or Dee, who are donor nurses, will reserve that donor for that recipient, and then they will call the recipient up and they'll say, when do you want to do it?
Okay.
And then they put her on the appropriate medications to prep her uterus to accept the embryos. And what happens is about 5 days before the planned transfer, the eggs are thawed out. The recipient's husband's sperm is then used to inseminate the eggs. And then we usually get 3, 4, or if we're really lucky, 5 embryos out of the egg thaw.
Okay.
And then we culture them out to day 5 typically, and we do a blastocyst transfer of 2 embryos.
Okay.
We have a warranty here. Now, we don't guarantee pregnancy, at least not yet. But we might be doing that. We might be offering a multi-cycle discount for with a pregnancy guarantee, but we haven't instituted that yet. But we are guaranteeing 2 quality embryos.
Okay.
So if the recipient gets only 1 embryo and then fails to get pregnant, we will give her another set of eggs at no additional cost.
Great.
If she gets 2 embryos that are high quality and she doesn't get pregnant, well, then that's the luck of the draw, unfortunately.
Well, and maybe something else is going on.
Yeah. But, right. But if we don't meet our burden of 2 quality embryos for transfer, we will provide another set of eggs.
Okay.
Fortunately, we haven't had to do that yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're up to our 100th transfer, and we haven't had an embryo quality problem yet that has led to failure of the cycle.
Okay. And this is the 100
transfers.
100 transfers with frozen eggs.
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
So then the patient finds out if she's pregnant 10 days after the transfer. And again, it's right now over a 70% pregnancy rate.
Which is great.
Which is just astonishing to us. And frankly, I can't take credit for that. That's all about our lab director, Peter Nagy, who really has taken the vitrification process, which frankly we did not invent, but we did modify.
So,
and it's the modifications that have made all the difference in the world for us.
So we've talking about four examples of why to freeze eggs. We've talked about fertility preservation and egg donation.
Right.
And I
two
know
more.
The two more. What was the third one?
The third one is for fertility preservation for cancer patients.
Cancer patients.
For anybody who's still reproductive age who wishes to preserve their egg quality before they go through chemo or radiation. We can do stimulation protocols, recover the eggs, and freeze them.
So cancer of any type, I mean,
breast
cancer, anything, because if you go through chemo, you have a hard time. I mean, there is the opportunity that you could lose some of your eggs and stuff.
Well, a lot of people who go through chemo, depending on the chemotherapeutic agent, will become menopausal.
Oh, okay.
The chemo will destroy their eggs.
Okay.
Not all chemo does that,
mm-hmm.
but many do. Many chemotherapies do that.
Okay.
And even if they don't destroy all the eggs and create menopause, they can damage the eggs to the point where they're not going to function well.
Yeah.
So egg freezing allows cancer patients to have their own genetic offspring after cancer therapy is complete.
Okay.
And then the fourth way is normal management of IVF.
Okay.
And in the long run, over the years, this will become the biggest application of egg freezing.
Okay.
What happens now in a stimulation protocol is a patient will take fertility drugs, she'll make a godzoodle number of eggs, they'll get recovered, and then we're not going to put eight back or six back like happened in California, we're going to put two back.
Okay.
In most patients, and three in some. Women over 40, it actually is okay to put multiple embryos back because the pregnancy rates are so low,
mm-hmm.
and the chance of multiple birth is incredibly low. So five, six, even seven embryos in a 41 or 42-year-old may be perfectly appropriate.
Especially, but, like if you said, the embryos may not be all that great.
Well, they won't be. I mean, that's almost a given.
Yeah.
But for women under 35, two is the limit.
Okay.
Right. So what do you do if you've got a 25-egg collection? Well, historically, we've inseminated everything, and there might be two embryos for transfer, but then there might be 13, 14, 15 embryos left over.
Which is actually what you and I were talking about before, and I want to jump in here to talk about this octuplet woman.
Sure.
Because I was thinking about what you were saying regarding the whole discarding of eggs versus discarding of embryos. And actually,
right.
I had lunch with my girlfriend a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about the fact that she had frozen some embryos after her first IVF treatment and went back to have those embryos put in for her second baby that she had.
That's correct.
And now she's got a couple of embryos sitting over there, and they're unsure what to do because here's our embryos. And what I kept hearing in this interview with this octuplet woman is that, you know, she kept wanting all these embryos put into her because she thought they were her babies.
Right.
So, I mean, I can understand the quandary. I mean, my concern with her is that she was really young. So, like you said, she had a gazoogle amount of eggs, and then she made all these embryos.
Right.
And then what do you do with them?
Right. Well, this is the dilemma. There are 100,000 about frozen embryos in labs across this country. And many of them they're not exactly abandoned because we know where the genetic parents are, and they're paying their storage fees, but they have no intention of using them.
Yeah, because what do they do with them?
Well, they can donate them, but a lot of embryos aren't eligible for donation.
Okay.
And a lot of embryos aren't good enough quality to donate.
Okay.
And some people have a real problem donating them for scientific research.
Yeah.
And other people have a real problem just destroying them.
Yes.
So if you freeze eggs before you inseminate them, this problem goes away because very few people have a problem throwing away eggs.
Yeah.
They don't think of that as a baby.
Yeah, because it's just an egg.
It's half the DNA. It's not the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And exactly. So if you have the ability to successfully freeze eggs without diminishing the chance of subsequent success, why wouldn't you freeze eggs instead of embryos? And the answer is you would freeze eggs instead of embryos.
Yes, yes. Because so then also, like you said, you're not paying storage fees. You're not having these sitting out there and weighing heavily on your...
No, you still pay the storage fee for the eggs while they're in the freezer, but once they're defrosted and they're gone, you're off the hook.
Or you just throw them away when you're finished.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the whole throwaway part. People have a real problem a lot discarding embryos.
Yes.
And we'll do it if people ask us to, but if they're in a quandary over whether to discard them or not, they get stuck. Either they have to take them back themselves, or they donate them to somebody else, or they keep paying the storage fees to maintain them indefinitely.
So it almost becomes, you know, a limbo as to what you're really supposed to do.
It is limbo. And so as basically the 340 IVF practices in the United States become competent to freeze, more and more will freeze eggs and not embryos.
Now, let's talk one more thing before we go, because I know you and I discussed this before we went on the air, talking about this octuplet woman, and
right.
I had said, okay, I want to bring up the whole embryo thing, and you said that you wanted to also bring up the fact that her doctor is not really one of you, which I hadn't heard that. Okay.
Right. Now, this is not in the mainstream press yet, which is, of course, making those of us who are reproductive endocrinologists very frustrated. To the best of my knowledge, there are no states, none of the 50 states, regulate who is allowed to practice what. So long as you have an MD after your name, it doesn't matter where you've trained or what your training is in. Even though I'm a reproductive endocrinologist, if I wanted to hang out a shingle and call myself a brain surgeon, if I can find a hospital stupid enough to give me privileges to do that, then I could be a brain surgeon.
Okay. That's pretty scary.
It's very scary. Now, the reason that doesn't happen is because the hospitals obviously police this and they don't give privileges to people who aren't qualified.
Yeah.
But fertility medicine is an office-based procedure, and there's no need for hospital privileges.
Yeah, because
so
you're doing it in your office.
Right, of course. So anybody can hang out a shingle and declare themselves to be a fertility doctor. To the best of my knowledge, the doctor who performed the octuplet procedure, he did do an obstetrics and gynecology residency in Cleveland 35 years ago, but there is no record of him ever becoming board certified after he trained, and there's no record of him ever doing fellowship training for reproductive medicine. So the argument that he, he's been doing it for 15 years, so he's grandfathered in, but he's been doing it without training badly for 15 years.
Well, very badly. If he's not even taking into consideration whether this woman can handle these kids or, you know, that she, I mean, even the fact that she had 6 embryos put in her and she's a young woman.
That's correct. Well, he violated every standard that we have, but even if he was practicing within guidelines, the problem here is that he gets lumped in with those of us who spent 3 years in fellowship training and sat for our boards.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are 650 or 700 of us in the U.S., and we all did 2 or 3 years of fellowship training to learn, you know, how to manage all of this.
Yes.
And, yeah, not all of us are going to follow guidelines either, unfortunately, but at least we've got the training. So the move now seems to be to regulate our industry. I think some regulation is probably warranted, but the regulation should be at the level of licensure. Who is allowed
to perform
these procedures?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, somebody who just hangs up a shingle and says, I'm a fertility doctor, should not have the same rights to perform these procedures as somebody who went through all of the training and who knows the standards and follows the dictates of the American Society for Reproductive Medicine.
So, Dr. Shapiro, I think that is a great point for us to end our interview on. You have to check out who your fertility doctor is, what clinic they work at, what their success rates are, what their information is before you go and do anything, because this is your babies and your life.
Correct.
Now, is there a website that people can learn more about the egg freezing or more about what you guys are doing with your practice?
They certainly can. They can go to rba-online.com.
Great.
Or myeggbank.com. Those are both of those websites are ours.
Great.
and learn all about this, or if they want to telephone, can I give a phone number?
Absolutely.
They can call my office directly at 404 in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, USA, 404-257-1773, or the main switchboard number is 404-257-1900.
Thank you so much for your time. You've provided valuable information, and I'll continue looking to see what's going on with egg freezing.
I really appreciate it, Tracy. Thank you.
Thank you.
And
have
now, a good one.
You too. Our weekly feature, Tracy's Tips for Being a Balanced Mom. Take a yoga class to get out of your head. Tap into the positive energy of yoga and just be in the moment for that class. It'll really, really center and balance you. My favorite type of yoga is Bikram, the hot yoga, which is done in 100-degree temperatures, because for me, it sweats out all my toxins. It allows me to totally warm up my body, and I can stretch everything from my neck to my back, and I'm in a meditative state for that hour and a half. So I totally recommend yoga to keep you balanced. Coming up next week, I'll be delving into the topic of the business of being a mom. Joining me back on the show will be Mindy Dooney from the Boogie Wipes Company. She's also a mother of three, and she's going to be sharing skills that are transferable from on the job as well as at home being a mom. And remember, be prepared for the transition your relationship will take once baby arrives by purchasing my book, 101 Questions for Expectant Parents, at Amazon.com. And I am available for private consultations with moms, dads, and couples to help you through this transitionary period. So you can call me at 1-888-261-7177. And you can also go to my website, TracySarabin.com. So until next week, remember that what matters is family on Family Matters. I'm Tracy Sarabin.
This has been Family Matters with Tracy Sarabin on WebTalkRadio.net. Thank you for listening.